This is the Puck Junk Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Puck Junk Hockey Podcast. I'm Sal Berry, and with me is Tim Parrish and Clemente Lisi. And today we are going to talk about Connor Bedard mania. Bedard mania. This is like Beatlemania, but Bedard cards, hockey cards, rookie cards. This is crazy. I mean, we're doing this episode. We're recording it on Wednesday. By the time you hear this, it'll probably be Friday. And there will probably be even more craziness and chaos that happened since then. But we're going to try to get you caught up on everything that's happened. I can't believe we're doing a podcast about pretty much a single card. One card. And it's not the Gretzky rookie card. But that's the world we live in now. So, gentlemen, how are you? Tim, I will start with you. How are you doing this fine Upper Deck Series 2 release day?
Oh, I'm just having a good old time sitting here sipping on my Mountain Dew Zero Sugar Major Melon and waiting for the apocalypse.
And Clemente, how about you, man?
All good. Just I knew this day was coming, and now that it's here, it's even crazier than I thought it would be.
Yeah. What will we do now that the card is out? It's like there was all this potential to write about. Right? It's like people speculating about who will win the Super Bowl, right? Speculate, and then it happens, and it's just like, okay, well, we can't talk about what we think might happen. Now it's happened. I do recall that we said that this could be a card that would eclipse $1,000 on the day of launch, and it did. But the first thing I want to mention real quick before I forget, before it gets buried at the end of the show, I just want to mention that the Chicago Sports Spectacular is coming up next weekend, March 15th through 17th in Rosemont, which is a suburb of Chicago. I will be set up. I'll be in a different spot, though. I won't have my usual nice big space. There was some sort of a mix-up with the tables or the whatever. So I'm actually going to be setting up with my friends at AU Sports and Memory Lane. They're the same people I set up with at the National. When you walk into the show, I'm going to be like a little bit to the left when you walk in. You walk in, you're going to see Baseball Card Exchange. And then to the left of them, you're going to see Memory Lane, but on the back side of that booth, you'll see AU Sports and Puck Junk. So I will be there. Please say hi. I'll have for sale the new goalie t-shirt that I talked about. I finally got those in. I will, if you pre-ordered one, those will be shipping out soon. And if you come to the show, I will have them for sale at the show, as well as other Puck Junk shirts. And some Connor Bedard cards, unfortunately. No Young Guns card, which I even wonder if people are going to ask about the Easter egg card anymore. Clemente, I'm going to throw it over to you because you just did another article about Bedard that I published a couple days ago in Sports Collector's Digest. You know, is it also going to be in the magazine as well, do you think?
I don't know. I don't think so. I think it was one of those just web hits because of the Wednesday release. But yeah, the piece basically details a lot of the stuff we know has happened, that it was going to be around $1,000, right, for the opening bid, and that all these shops are excited about it, and that, you know, Upper Deck's very excited about it because they realize it's an opportunity for them to, you know, extend the hockey collector pool a little bit. Now, don't get me wrong, I'm excited about that prospect, but I'm also realized that maybe these high prices will freeze people out, people who've been in the hobby collecting for decades. And so there's a good and a bad, and we'll talk about that, I'm sure. But I think my piece tried to capture a little bit of that and a little bit of sort of the context of this mania, which is, yeah, Eric Lindros back in 1991. And then there is, you know, Crosby, Ovechkin, then McDavid. So there's these sort of these seminal moments in the hobby of these highly touted rookies and their cards going for a lot of money. But I do think that we've been in this hobby as collectors and for decades. And I think this Bedard situation is a little unique, and maybe because it's post-pandemic, it's a different stratosphere than I think past rookie cards.
Yeah, I mean, I'd agree with that. Tim's nodding in agreement, like, mm-hmm. But yeah, and you mentioned, I think those are all the four that you have to mention. When I put out the newsletter earlier this week, and then I repurposed the editorial for an article, I mentioned, yeah, there are four milestones. As far as like player collecting or like investing go, I mean, because of course you could say, oh, well, you know, the 51 Parker set, that's a milestone. Well, yes, it is. First modern set, blah, 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 whatever, right? But like, yeah, Lindros, because even before then, I mean, people who collected hockey cards were just hockey fans. But the thing is that the fandom grew in the 90s with Gretzky getting traded to the Kings. And then all of a sudden you had more people collecting, you had more companies making cards. The whole investment idea was finally starting to trickle its way to hockey. You know, you think back to like the 80s, like when baseball cards really caught fire, you know, with like Don Mattingly rookie cards being counterfeited and stuff like that. So by the time that passion got to hockey, it was like 1990, you had Eric Lindros, right? And then, you know, then we didn't see that again really for like 15 years, because it was like, yeah, there were players that people wanted to collect, but then you'd be like, oh, this Timu Solani guy, oh, he had a rookie card a year ago? Oh, this Martin Brodeur guy, wait, he had a rookie card a year ago? This Peter Forsberg guy, wait, he had a rookie card 3 years ago? And actually, let me correct myself, the Broder was rookie of the year 93-94, but his rookie card, as you know, is 90-91. Then Forsberg, I believe, was rookie of the year in 95. But you get the idea, right? Like, you get these players, oh yeah, Paul Kariya, wait, he had a rookie card in 92, but he didn't start playing till this season or whatever. So as far as just like people just being like, oh my God, I have to have this card. I mean, I started collecting again, like seriously, in 2005, and I couldn't find product because people were buying it because of Sidney Crosby. I mean, yes, and Alex Ovechkin, but really Crosby was what was driving the demand for 05-06 product. I mean, look at how many products Upper Deck put out that year. I mean, they were kind of on par with Pacific in like the late 90s. Yeah, and then McDavid 10 years later, and the big deal about that was EPAC. Right? So now we have like all of these things kind of fall in line. Like people know what hockey is. There's a lot more fans. People are invested in hockey players. You have online sales like EPAC and stuff like that. So now this is like the perfect storm. And then you got Bedard, who's playing for the third largest market in North America. Tim, you've been documenting how this day has unfolded. I think you have like a timeline of events.
Yeah, because I was surprised that I wasn't going to wake up to like social media had already exploded because the 101 was found and DA decided to give the $1 million away, which I think is total bogus.
Oh, yeah. Explain that real quick for those who don't know.
The bounty.
Yeah, the bounty.
You pull the 101 Outburst Gold, they'll give you $1 million for it.
Only if it's in good shape. They said it has to grade around a 9 is what I read.
Yeah. So the chances of you getting that $1 million are pretty slim, if you ask me. But it's a gimmick. I mean, it's all a gimmick. They keep doing those bounties on all these cards and all the other sports. And it was only a matter of time before something triggered it to spill over into hockey. And, you know, the points that you were making already, you know, talking about, you know, rookie cards and driving the prices based off of rookie cards because people are chasing them. Look, how many times do you hear arguments in every other sport about what is and isn't a rookie card? It's constant. In hockey, you don't really have that. People generally more or less will follow, you know, hey, that's a rookie card. That's a rookie card. I mean, obviously we don't look at CHL products and things like that that Upper Deck does every year and say, those are rookie cards. We know they're not, and we don't try to pass them off as being rookie cards. We know how that stuff follows. And we have always said on here, I know I've always said, and we've had discussions for many years about how hockey card collectors are weird. They're particular. They do things their own way and they beat their own drum. The other segments of the hobby aren't really like that. You know, everything that we're seeing happening today is all driven by everybody from the outside looking in to this environment that they can invade from these other places. And they're just trying to come in based off of the hype and get a piece of it. Get a piece of this world that we've all enjoyed for all of these years. And now we have to open it up to all the riffraff. So, with that being said, I turned on the old Twitter machine this morning, or X machine. What are we calling it? Can we get a definitive name for this? Somebody, please.
Well, I was calling it Twix for a little while, like Twitter and X. So I thought Twix was funny, but that didn't catch on.
Yeah. I mean, I like Twix, but I think they're delicious rather than a social media platform. But so I kind of started down this path, and you guys were the victim of hearing all of my stuff over and over again all day long with a running thing. And we're right in the middle of the trade deadline in the NHL too. So that's kind of what's going on that side. So every 5 seconds, somebody's posting rumor, somebody's going here, rumor, somebody's going here. Well, I documented my thing today. So without further ado, I'm going to go through this. So bear with me because things are going to change. So about 9:15 this morning, a whole host of sales were up with completed sales on eBay. So if we're just looking at eBay, it's the only platform I was really paying attention to. The base Young Gun, bunch of sales. 990, 740, 1116, 903, 1105, 980, 1195, 973. So we're hovering in the 900, mostly in the 900 to 1100 range for the base Young Gun. Now, these are auctions that were buy it now auctions. Can't confirm them because a lot of them didn't show up on Terapeak, but they showed completed on the main site. Terapeak wasn't listing them, which means they probably weren't paid yet, so they didn't pop up. They may fall off. They may have been jokes. They may have been people shillbilling. Don't know. This is unscientific. We're simply looking at it like that. The checklist card, $300, $400 right off the bat. The silver outburst checklist showed up. That one had a price tag about $750 on it. And the lowest buy it now I even saw for a checklist at the time was $85. Now that's 9:15 Central Time this morning. So about 9:36, there's a breaker out there that pulled an outburst silver after opening what they said were three cases. At that time, no word on pricing. 10:23, that same group posted that they pulled the silver outburst checklist. A blue dazzler. Looked like it had a ding corner. And the pop count card, the pop count 500. And we find out that they were opening 15 cases. So I don't know how far they were into those 15 cases at that point. But keeping score, that's the outburst silver after three. And then the outburst silver checklist, a dazzler, and a pop count 500. So 1104, silver Bedard popped up as a listing for $2,500. The pop count card popped up as a listing. The 500 for 500, $499.99. 1157, a clear cut showed up as a listing. $16,000.
That's not the paid price. That's just the asking price.
No. This was listed because these came out today. So unless they were putting them at buy it now, they weren't selling. They were
because people will ask for crazy, stupid amounts and then always say, or best offer.
Oh, yeah. You can ask for whatever you want. It's a free country. It's a free market. Do whatever you want. I'm simply reporting that someone posted this $16,000. Okay, so this is 11:57. So from 9:15 to almost lunchtime, we've gone from $1,000 base Bedard Young Guns to a $16,000 clear cut that shows up. 12:50 after lunch. First arrival that I see of a portraits card. $108. Okay, fine. But a portraits card, really? These are quarter box cards. 110, a deluxe checklist. You know, a real live numbered card that actually has scarcity. Listed at $117. 223, a red outburst gets pulled by somebody. It was pulled from the blowout forum. Somebody posted it. The red outburst, sweet looking card. Really cool looking. These are numbered out of 25. Again, actual scarcity. But we don't know. I didn't see that one show up anywhere. But you got to think with those other prices, numbered out of 25, that's got to be 10, 15 grand easily, if not more. That's what I'm thinking at the time. 311, not the band. the time. Pop count 1,000 sells for 370. That pop count 500 from earlier shows sold at $500. Oh, an update to that Ding Corner Dazzler. The only reason why I know is the same exact picture. Sold for $200. So a Dazzler for $200. Another quarter box card for the most part. 324, I'm looking at everything. Consistent sales continuing between 900 and 1100 for the base young gun. About 424, a shop on X, Twitter, Twix, whatever. They pulled a pop count 50. Haven't seen one of these yet. So what does that go for? I don't know. 800, 1,000? What are we putting on that? Hasn't shown up yet that I've seen. 440, someone lists a deluxe young gun. Here we are, back to a numbered card. Deluxes are numbered out of 250. So again, real scarcity that you can measure. There's 250 of them. The list price is comically set, and this is what I sent you guys. Comically set at $98,998. Canadian, of course. So, you know, whatever the exchange rate on that is. What is it, like $1.40 now?
It's like $45 American or $98,000 Canadian. No, whatever. Yeah,
98 Canadians, like 74,000 American, maybe, whatever. Still crazy. Yeah, absolutely. But again, in listing, you can list wherever it wants. But this is the mind frame and the mentality that people are in today because of all the insanity. So time to go home. Work day's over. Accomplished a lot today. I go home 6:30. I take a look to try to see what's going down. I have everything sorted by newest so I can see what's on top from the last time I looked to the new. Young guns seem to have plateaued, sort of. Bottom sales are in the 740, 750 range now, but rolling up to just under 1,000. So now instead of 900 to 1,100, we're at like 740, 750. Quite a few of those types of sales going up into the 900 range. So in the matter of 12 hours, these things drop down $200. That seems interesting. So 725, we're getting ready to do the show. There's an Outburst Silver for a buy it now of $5,100 shows up. There's another one for 3,000. There's another one for 3,200. So now we have an answer on what the Outburst Silver is going to, the ask price is from earlier in the day. The deluxe young gun that was pulled earlier, same picture, is now listed. Venture to guess what that one's listed for?
$98,000.
Close. 72,000. Or best offer. But again, there's another one on there. I found a second one. And it's got a listing with regular auction, and the auction is at opening bid $4,000 right off the top. So who knows where that's going to settle. So you can either buy one now, 72,000 or best offer, or start bidding at $4,000, whichever you want to choose. So about 750, I look up the checklist again. Now remember, we were talking about the checklist, lowest price was 85 this morning. They're consistently selling between 35 and 60 bucks now. So again, this is down 20 to 25, $30 in a matter of 12 hours.
Well, what did it start at? Didn't you say the checklist was like $100? Because I noticed I saw one sell for 40.
Yeah, the lowest buy it now I could find was $85, and there were a couple of those. So that was kind of my starting point for the checklist, was 85. Now it's down to 35 to 60.
And then let me just ask really quick, what was the Outburst Silver selling for? Because those are not numbered. The reds are numbered, but not the silvers, if I remember correctly.
Correct. The silvers are not numbered. You know, originally the few that were pulled, none of them were listed. And then now when they're finally listed, that was the one where I said about 730 or so. I found one with a buy it now of $5,100. And there's a couple others that are listed starting at around $3,000. So a non-numbered Outburst at $3,000 to $5,000. A deluxe numbered out of 250 listed for $72,000. So again, take this with a grain of salt. People can list crap for whatever they want to list it for. And there are closed auctions for a lot of this stuff. I've run through a bunch of it. Again, I take all of that with a grain of salt because we don't know until most of these can actually be verified. But I think we're starting to, at least for today, this could change in the next 3 days or whatever, or by the time this, you know, this show is hitting your ear holes, could be totally different. But as it stands right now, it's kind of 750, 800 is a comfortable range for the base young gun right now. By Friday, it could be 500. I don't know. Here's my whole thing. As more and more of the stuff gets busted and opened and flooded onto the market, I think people are going to start to see, oh, wow, this isn't rare, because there's hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of them. Again, I prefaced this in the beginning by saying we have all of this spillover from the other segments of the hobby trying to come in and look at what it is we're all about over here and trying to bring that same mentality. And what's going to happen is those people are going to realize quickly that it's not sustainable at that price. Do I think a Bedard young gun is going to drop down to $200? Absolutely not. I don't think it's going to go down to $200. I don't think it will for a while unless something drastically happens with him and he falls off a cliff or gets hurt again or something of that nature. I don't see that happening. I think this is going to be a $400 or $500 card for quite a while, but I do think that's where it's going to go. And all of these other ones, as the day went on, they were coming down. The inserts, the portrait card, the Dazzler cards, you know, the other inserts that people were randomly finding and things like that, they were starting to come down. And some of the numbered ones, their asks were a lot higher. So yeah, you got to remember, people looked at this going, well, this is a short print, so it must be like super rare. I was in a conversation with somebody today and I'm like, look, they're short printed. Absolutely, they're short printed. Mathematically, they are short printed. They're not rare. Young guns are not rare. They're just short printed. And that's short printed based off of the rest of the base cards. And I think we've talked about this numerous times, and I'm not going to get into the scientific part of, you know, all of it and in the math part of all of it. But simply, if you looked at it, if they made 100 million cards, let's say they printed 100 million cards, right? And a box, just take a hobby box, for instance. How many young guns do you get in a hobby box? You get 6. And now what's the configuration? 12 by 12. So there's 144 cards. So 6 out of 144, simple math, that's 4%. What's 4% of 100 million? 4 million. So that means there's 4 million young guns. And what are the odds of pulling a Bedard? Well, it's 1 out of 49 because there's 49 young guns. So you do 1 out of 49 times the 4 million. And what do you come up with? About 85,000, which gives you a rough idea of how many Bedard young guns there will be. 85,000. Short printed, yes. Rare? I mean, I don't know what your definition of rare is, but I like my steaks rare, but that's certainly not rare.
You know, Pinnacle used to have an ad, Pinnacle Brands, who did the Score hockey cards and Score baseball cards and Pinnacle hockey cards. And they had it was like a magazine ad, and it had like a picture of like a steak. But then it also had like pictures of like Pinnacle cards, and it said like any rarer and you'd have to put them on the grill.
Gag.
Right. And then underneath that, it said like only 100,000 cases of Pinnacle Series 1 will be produced or whatever. Right. And now we look at that and go, ooh, 100,000 cases. The lowball print run in the 90s is ridiculous by today's standards. You know, like when you find a card serial numbered out of 4,000 or something from like 96 or whatever. But, you know, the other thing I wanted to ask you, you said 49 young guns. Why didn't you say 50? Because there's 49 and then the young guns checklist. Did I miss something there?
I didn't say 50 because I'm not counting the checklist.
I see. Okay, gotcha. I'm just going to say this really quick. Just want to get it off my chest. You have Bedard's young gun selling for $1,000 on average. maybe it's coming down a little bit, but we'll just say 1,000, right? 1,000 on average. I bought a Wayne Gretzky OPC rookie card graded for less than that. Now, it wasn't Gem Mint PSA 10. I think it was like a 3.5 or a 4. Looked great to me. Happy with what I paid for it. But think about that for a second. I'll just say it again, and then we'll just do a dramatic pause for emphasis. I paid less for a graded Gretzky rookie card than a brand new Connor Bedard rookie card.
It's silly. You know, I mean, you know the old adage, right? You know, the people say all the time, make it make sense, right?
Uh-huh.
So if you're going to make it make sense, how do you do that? Well, this is an iconic card for a generational type player. So get in your DeLorean and go backward. And what other ones do we have to compare it to? Do we want to say Matthews? We can. Just sure, throw him in the mix. But certainly McDavid, certainly Crosby, certainly Ovechkin. And prior to that, most of the hype machine over any of the young gun rookies up into 2005 really boiled down to what they did in their career afterward and whether or not there was any interest in it. Because at the time, they were what they were. I mean, you go back to the 90s, we all know that all that was overproduced. So 90, 91, that whole time frame, any of those young gun cards, they weren't looked at as being these pivotal type investment pieces. Sure, if you want to go back and look and see, like, you know, a Fedorov card or they're great cards, but they're not worth that much because there's so much of it. But if you take those iconic ones, like you said, the Gretzky rookie, any of these big iconic ones, if you look at the where they're selling, even the graded versions, and I'll put things in the 7, 8, 9, 10 range. I mean, obviously tens are going to be out of reach. But I've seen nines, PSA, BGS, whatever alphabet soup you want to tag on them, go for under $3,000 for all of those guys. And here we've got unnumbered, certainly not scarce, young guns right out of the box at $1,000. I mean, it is what it is. We knew this was going to happen. It's just when you see it actually unfold, it baffles you. It blows your mind. And watching this unfold today was, as much as I didn't want to take part in it, it was so much fun to watch because it just made me laugh all day long. All day long.
Well, what I want to say is that, you know, thank you for documenting that timeline, because I think that timeline tells you a lot about the hobby today. So kudos to the guy who sold that card for $1,200 in the morning, because that's the highest you're going to get probably for it, you know, unless something else happens. Ungraded, right? Raw. But as you can see, I think you're right. As more people are busting cases and people who are, you know, you mentioned the number of cars out there. Let's be honest. In the past, Upper Deck has been unable to sell a lot of product. And so it sits on the shelves for a couple of years and people buy wax years later. Here, people are busting it in record numbers in a short amount of time. I mean, you said 16 cases in one day. I mean, that's ridiculous. No one's doing that. I mean, that's really rare for hockey, for baseball, basketball, football, that happens, but not for hockey. So you're right. As eBay gets flooded, simple economics will tell you it's $1,000 card, but not if there's a lot of them. And a lot of these auctions you're going to see are going to go with no bids or no offers. And people are going to be like, oh, I put $1,000. I got nothing. I'll put it back. I'll relist it for $700. You know, they want to, you know, or 500. I mean, I was looking right now as you guys were talking on eBay, completed sales of McDavid Young Guns cards, BGS ones, and even raw ones are going for $900 to $1,000. Now you're telling me you have $1,000 to burn a hole in your pocket. You're not going to go out and get a McDavid Young Gun? I would get that. The guy is an established star. He's a Hall of Famer. He still has plenty of career left. He can only get better, right? He can only go up in value. Right. So I think it's day one and everyone's going to get crazy day one and day two and day three. And then you're going to see in a month from now. I'm really curious to see, for example, next week, I'll be in Chicago. You guys will be in Chicago, like at the show. People at the show will ask a lot of money for this card because we saw that Sal and I did at the expo with the draft card, the Easter egg card. People are asking 800 Canadian within weeks of it being released. And so I can see dealers wanting to think, oh, people are going to come to the show and they're going to want to pay $1,000 for this card without realizing that it's 10 days into these eBay auctions where people are like, $1,000? No thanks. Maybe $800, maybe $700. So it'll be curious to see. I'm really curious to see what happens at the show and what goes on in a month from now. Where are we? Because Lafreniere was $600, and then of course his form dipped. He wasn't as good as Bedard, and now the card can be had for very, very little. So I'm just curious to see what happens with Bedard, whether on and off the ice. It's regardless of that, I think it's the amount of product out there and the amount of ripping that's going on is going to indicate. And these people that are in the hobby now that are just dipping in, they're going to dip back out. If they can't make a profit, they're out.
The fun dichotomy, I think, of that whole thing is going to be, here's what's happening online where everybody's going and throwing all of it to, here's what's happening in person, face to face, dealer to buyer in Bedard's market.
Right.
That's something to gauge. And I think you're probably going to see that bump where it's like, well, you know, if I was in New York selling this card, I'm going to sell it for $700, but I'm in Chicago, so I'm selling it for $950. So I think you may see that again. I think this card might settle in the $400 and $500 range. If we get to the end of the season, he wins Rookie of the Year, it might get another little bump, but that's further down the road. And before anybody gets mad, if you're listening and like comes after me, oh, your math is wrong and all this kind of, yeah, I know it is. I'm not a mathematician. I'm not an astronaut. I don't do that. So what I'm simply saying is my numbers might be off. The point is real. Like the point that I'm trying to make, and I think most people understand that, is when you look at the actual odds of pulling this stuff and everything else, this is what you're getting. And this result of what you're seeing online is everybody like, this is a rare card. This is a scarce card. This is, you know, it's a short print. This is this. And this is people that don't know what's going on. And I know you want to say something, Sal. I got a story after that.
No, I was just going to say, I mean, a lot of what's fueling this is people want a thing that people want so they could sell the thing to the people who want it, right?
Oh, that's called trade night. That's called trade night.
Yeah, exactly. Trade night, where it's like, hey, Clemente, I'll give you $50 for that $100 card so I could turn around and sell it for $100, right? You know, so I really wish I could find a breakdown of how many people want the Connor Bedard rookie card because they want a Connor Bedard rookie card versus how many people want it just to turn around and sell it. Because when I did the Chicago Sports Spectacular in November, people came to me and said, do you have the Connor Bedard Easter egg card, the draft card? And I said, no, I saw a couple of them at the expo, but I wasn't going to pay $700 so that you could offer me $500. Everyone laughed at that because that's what they would do, right? Because they were the guys with the cases who were like, you know.
Yeah, it's a laugh, but it's an uncomfortable laugh because it's true.
I was busting them a little bit, but I wasn't being like a jerk about it. Like, well, I didn't buy it for $700, so you could just lowball me on it. I just said, no, I wasn't going to spend $700 so I could sell it to you for $500. And they'd crack up. A lot of people would ask for the card, and then I'd say, I don't have it, but I have some other Bedard cards. And they'd be like, okay. I mean, they'd agree, yeah, $700 is a lot for a card, and you don't have it. But even if you did, I probably wouldn't buy it anyways. So then all of a sudden, $30 looks pretty good for another card, you know, if you just like the player. So I feel like people like that, they want the card because they like the player and they want the card, right? So I want to know, like, is it a 50-50 split? Is it 70-30 of people just wanting to buy the card so they could resell it? I feel like it's maybe skewed more than 50-50. Like, yes, we argued about this when we talked about game dated moments, and I said 1,200, you know, print run of 1199. And you guys were like, well, guys, Bedard has more than 1,199 fans. And it's like, okay, yes, he does have more than 1,200 fans, but were they all trying to order the card at the same time when I was trying to order one and flood the Upper Deck EPAC website and it crashes? And then, you know, an hour later, people are pre-selling the card for $100 online. I mean, I don't think those are the fans that are doing that, that really wanted the card. So that's just kind of what I wanted to say. I want to know how many actually want the card and how many are just flipping it.
I don't know that you could ever get a rational answer to that question because so many people are going to lie. I mean, they're just going to be like, yeah, I'm a collector. I collect, even though I don't own anything that I wouldn't immediately turn around and sell. But yeah, I think that'd be hard to ascertain, but it'd be a good gauge to kind of figure out what's driving this the most. And honestly, we've already talked about it. At this point, it's the hype. Once the hype train dies down, then we'll see how many people are left. You know, it's musical chairs. When the music stops, how many people are left playing? So this is more musical chairs where they take all the chairs away and there's one left. Everybody's fighting for that same chair. But something to point out, when I started that little journey this morning, there were roughly about 100 current listings when you type in Connor Bedard Young Guns as a search. Last I checked before we went on the show, there were roughly about 350 of them. And there were about 40 completed auctions. Now, again, you type that in, you're going to get a bunch of other stuff because people put dumb things in their description to get it to hit when it's not really what that is. But just there was like 40 some. Now there's like 300 and some in the completed list too, when I looked at that. So, I mean, that kind of tells you where you went from. We went from 0 to 60 in less than 24 hours from when this was supposed to be released. And shockingly enough, that fake one that popped up the other day of the fake photo that somebody recycled from last November that came out, there's a couple auctions still out there for that. I couldn't believe that people are still trying to pull the wool over others' eyes with that stupid fake Young Gun. Ticks me off. I wish eBay would do something about that crap.
You're talking about the fake Young Gun where he has the captain's C on his sweater?
Yeah, like we know what this one looks like, where he's like kind of leaned down, like he's either going to pass the puck or take a pass, mm-hmm. or whatever.
Yeah.
That one, he's kind of like, he shifted a little bit and kind of closer up in the camera. It's not even the same photo. It's like a completely different photo.
Okay.
I mean, it was bogus. We talked about that before because that hit eBay as a pre-sell picture back in November. And everybody was like, what is this? How do you have this? How does anybody have this? We don't know what this is. And it was a totally fake, bogus
picture. But that was the one where he had the C on his jersey.
He may have. I don't
know. No, because that was the dead giveaway. And then everybody's like, yeah, that's a Team Canada jersey. And they just photoshopped the Blackhawk logo on it.
Could have been.
Yeah, I mean, if I'm thinking of the one that I saw, I'm sure there's been more than one. But I mean,
the amazing one is like I said earlier, is the Etsy one. I wish I had a copy of that card.
How much is it? It's less than 25 grand. You should buy it.
It's like 40 bucks. So they wanted 40 bucks for it.
It's a lot to pay.
It's so amazing. It's like made by Japanese AI and it's awesome.
Yeah, that's a lot to pay for a joke. I mean, I think the Pro Set Memories buyback of Bruce Shoebottom numbered 1 out of 1 was like $100 or something. And I'm just like, nah, that's too much to pay for a joke. I'll buy cards for ironic reasons. I mean, heck, you have the Bad Hockey Card Hall of Fame. I give away cards for ironic reasons too, right? So, I mean, I can't see myself spending, yeah, $40 for a terrible Bedard fake card. I don't know. I think the fake cards that you make are funnier. The little line art drawings that you do of like Honest Wagner and Wayne Gretzky. I thought those were pretty funny.
I actually pulled a Bruce Shoebottom autograph out of Panini Classic Signatures.
Nice.
That year.
Nice.
It was like a timeless, I think it was called Timeless Legends or Timeless Signatures. It's like a sideways card, but Yeah. I mean, not, speaking of Bruce
Shoebottom. Not to diss on Bruce Shoebottom, but I mean, Timeless Signatures, come on.
I can't remember if that was his call. It was Timeless something, I think.
I mean, could see him being in like a Tough Guys kind of set, although I'm not super familiar with this card. All I know is that he had a card in Pro Set Series 2 in 1991, and I think it's like one of the like least important hockey cards ever made, because like he was called up for the start of the 1990 season and played two games, and then he was sent back down, and that was like the end of his NHL career. So it's funny how Pro Set would like scramble, like, oh my god, we got to get this guy in series two. You know, guy would play 8 minutes in one game and then they'd put him in a set. I mean, I get it, everybody was scrambling to make rookie cards of everybody, and I think that's kind of nice. Like, I think in the 90s, or the 80s rather, 70s and 80s, when players had to earn a rookie card, you know, you have a guy like Rick Tocchet, and it's like, come on, how many games does this guy have to play before you're going to give him a rookie card? You know what I mean? Because I think he played like a season or two, or like Gerard Gallant. Like, I think it took him like four seasons to get like a rookie card, you know? And then in the 90s, it's like a guy gets within 500 feet of an NHL rink, and it's like, rookie card for you, right? But now it's like, oh, he hasn't played a game, so he can't get a rookie card.
We have rules now.
Yeah.
You must follow the rules.
But unless he's a goalie.
It's true.
Then you could be David Altshuler and get 80 cards for backing up Cam Ward. Yay? So we have rules, and they kind of don't matter.
As long as it falls under the rules, you can... You may not like it, because, but if it falls under the rules, then it's allowed. A la Vegas Golden Knights keep signing players that they can't afford because of LTIR. Not making the parallel or anything, but I am.
But we also have eBay or online auctions. Look, if this Bedard card was living in 1991, you'd have to go to your card shop and hope they had it, or you have to bust hobby boxes to get it. And back then, the chances were good that you'd get it because it was mass produced. And so it was a lot easier to get your hands on it. And you didn't know what people were doing or paying for it. I mean, yeah, you had Beckett come out a month later. How accurate that was, we don't know, right, to this day. So it was a lot slower. I mean, what you just did, Tim, with this anatomy of this card, you can never have done that 30 years ago. We know that. And so it's interesting because I think eBay is trying to compete with like Heritage and Golden. And let's be honest, when you have a top card you want to sell, you're not putting it on eBay. You're going to go to these auction houses. And so, you know, people are putting, you know, $40,000, $80,000 for a card. No one's buying anything on eBay for $80,000. I'm sorry. Those are just things to get attention. You know, you look in the completed sales, you'll see, you know, like you said, $1,200, $800, that's the range. Right. And that's where it's going to be. Now, when you mentioned the show in Chicago, that's what I'm really looking forward to, is seeing how a dealer is going to be like, this is $1,000 card. And then someone's going to be like, but latest comps show. And, you know, the comps show what? The latest comps may show 800, but you go back a day, it's 1200, right? Or whatever it is. And so dealers are going to be like, put your phone away. Like, I don't want to see that. Like, it's that friction always exists. We know that.
They say that anyway.
They do. But often there's a negotiation. I think some dealers are going to say, I don't even want to see that. I don't care what people are selling stuff on eBay. And then the buyer is going to say, but this is the only thing I have to a modern day Beckett that tells me what the price is. Now, the dealer will say, the price is what I say it is. If you don't like it, go down the hall. I think there will be no shortage of this card in Philly this weekend at the Philly show. Next week in Chicago, there'll be no shortage of it. I guarantee it. If at the expo, there were what, about 7 or 8 draft cards? That's about it.
Yeah.
I think there'll be a lot more than that here. And in a lot of ways, if you think about it, I'd go on eBay right now and look up the draft card. How much is that going for? Is it cheaper? I'd buy that. If I have $1,000, I'll buy that. It's not $1,000. It's cheaper. Or get the marquee rookie, the Opeachy one, the one that we were bemoaning last week as being so expensive. What is it? $80? $100? I don't know.
I think we need to give it another week. Those will all bottom out.
I agree. And then you can go.
But what's the bottom? What's the bottom? And, you know, and the MVP rookie, or MVP rookie, the MVP draft redemption card.
We don't even know what that looks like yet, right? Right.
I think once the redemption gets redeemed, I think that redeemed card might hold some value, like a $40, $50 card. I think the Opeachy card is going to be well under 70, probably in the 30 range.
Right.
Pretty quickly. I think that SSP from the draft card is, I think a sweet spot for that would be $100. Like if the Young Gun's going to settle in at 450, I think that would be $100. And, you know, it is what it is. Maybe 200. I doubt it. It'll definitely go below 200 if it hasn't already. There were a few sales of it still in the $400 range.
Which card now? The draft card?
The Easter egg card.
Yeah,
the draft card.
Yeah, I think the key here is not to have FOMO and to wait. Because
oh, absolutely.
And if you're patience is a virtue that nobody has in the modern world. But I'm telling you, if you're willing to wait a year, 3 months, 10 years, I mean, I got a Gretzky rookie 2 years ago. The card is like 40 years old, right? Like, you know, so what I'm getting at is, you know, you don't have to get this card today or even this month. Yes, people are talking about it and you want to brag on your Instagram and all that nonsense. But look, that's not what a lot of people collect sets like you guys. That you're not doing that, right? And it's a slow. It could take years and years and years to build a set. That's the fun part. And if the Bedard card is the last card you get in 5 years, that's so be it. But that's not what this is about. And then when you know Sal was asking, well, who are the people coming in? And look, we'll never know. Like Tim is right, we'll never know a percentage. But look, if you're at a show and somebody walks in with a silver case, that person is not collecting sets. They're not. They're just buying cards. They're grading them. They're flipping them. It's a business for them. Only they don't want to bother with a table at the show. So their business is roving, right? They're walking around like a drug salesman or something, like a you know, pharmaceutical salesman. Like they're going around trying to sell you something, right? Or they go to trade night. That's why I don't go to trade night. At any show, I'm like, trade night. I'll get dinner.
Yeah, there's no trading going on.
There is no trading, and everyone looks at you like you should be their wholesaler because I'm important. I have a silver case, and who are you, right? I mean, look, Sal and I had fun at the expo, and we had fun at the trade night, but we had fun at the trade night because it was a train wreck. I mean, because people would take all these tables, and you can tell the mood had already changed. It was like I said to Sal, everything I hate about this hobby is in this room right now. Because at a show, you don't see that. At a show, it's all spread out, right? But it's like the train night is a magnet. They all go in there. And look, I understand you need people. And look, Upper Deck, I think, is hoping if 5% or 10% of those people stick around, then that's good for Upper Deck. It's good for the hobby. And maybe it is. Maybe some people will say, you know what? I like Bedard, but I also like this guy and that guy. And 5 years ago, this guy came out. And, you know, people stick around. We all have to start somewhere. Right, as collectors. But the people that are flipping, some of them by 9:15 had started, some of them by 3 o'clock were already out, probably. They were like, I can't make the money I thought I was gonna make. I'm out.
That's a valid point. That's an absolutely valid point.
One thing that Tim said on Twitter, and I'm paraphrasing what you said, but you said something along the lines of, now people, don't forget, don't just post your hits, post your misses too. So that, you know, we can see that. Not every box has a Connor Bedard in it. You know what I mean? And you know what this is like? What this reminds me of? You know, like when the cops do like a big drug bust and they have the table and they have like all the bags of cocaine and all the piles of money and all
the guns
that,
and everything
all the
else.
Guns and the guns are like all pointing in the same direction. Like they like neatly lay everything out. So you walk in and go, oh, that's a lot of contraband. Or you see like the camera sweep by and you go, oh, that's a lot of contraband. The New York PD is doing its job, right? And that's like what people do when they post their breaks and they'll have like 19 Connor Bedard cards. And it's just like, yeah, dude, how many cases did you buy of Series 2?
Because they threw everything else in the garbage. That's the
right,
thing.
You know what I mean?
Right. Right.
And so you go, look at my hits from my breaks, and you go, wow. And then what they're not telling you is that they broke 15 cases. They'll say, I'm going to break 15 cases because that makes them sound big. Like, oh, you got 15 cases. He's important.
It's a flex. It's a flex. Yeah,
yeah
it's a flex.
Right. It's a hobby flex. Yeah. And then, and like that Opeachy image for my newsletter. I found it on Twitter. Somebody, I guess they did a case break or two of, maybe it was a 5 case break of OPG, and it had like all the Bedard marquee rookies and retro rookies.
It was everything they had pulled from that. Yeah.
Right.
They were all lined up.
They're all lined up. Like I said, like drug bust style. It's hilarious.
Well, and what was the odd already figured out? There's 1.4 per case, basically.
Yeah.
So 1.4. So you might get 2 in a case, but the odds are you're going to get 1.
Yeah.
So that brings me to what I said earlier. I had a story for you. So I don't know if anybody else saw this, but something was posted earlier by someone else from somewhere else. And apparently it came from Facebook. So, you know, it's going to be a doozy. So apparently this guy walked into his local card shop and got a box and opened the box and ta-da, Connor Bedard. And the shop owner says, I'll buy that from you. And the guy says, okay. And then they talk back and forth. And he offered to trade him instead for a hobby box, another hobby box. And the guy took the deal. Because he thought, in his mind, he had another shot at another Bedard in the next box that he was going to be handed.
On the same case, probably. Right?
See, you are thinking like a normal hockey collector. But I think any other rational hockey collector person that walks into an LCS and talks with their dealer about what they're going to buy has some iota of a rational idea of what it is they're getting themselves into. We've known from the beginning that the odds on most young guns, when it comes to a case, that's what they are, just because it's math. And so you figure that out. So if you get one box, knowing that there's a stack of 10 boxes sitting on a shelf, you got to think they all came from the same case. What in your right mind thinks that there's another one in that? Now, I know exactly what he was doing, and he even admitted later on what he was doing. He thought he was getting another lottery ticket to try to pull that gold outburst. Because until somebody finds it, that's Wonka's golden ticket. And that's what everybody's looking for, because we have a one-of-one young gun for the first time ever that anybody wants. I mean, yeah, we had him in Series 1, but here's the one. If anybody pulls this, it's the Holy Grail card. It's the White Whale. It's going to make whoever buys it or gets it to retire.
Well, it's funny because you say that, because it reminds me of when Series 1 came out, I went to my LCS. And look, I have to assume that an LCS gets one case, maybe two, maybe more, depending on.
Depends if they break or not.
Yeah, and I think mine does not. But also, what's the interest in hockey? Because they don't want to sit in a product, you know? Because I've gone to my LCS and seen, like, Series 1 from, like, 3 years ago and still sitting on the shelves. It's like, you know, they can't sell it anymore, right? And so I remember going in there and asking, oh, do you have Series 1? Like, yeah, you know. I was like, oh, did anybody get the, you know, the guy admitted. The guy just said, oh, yeah, somebody said they got the, you know, the draft card, the Easter egg card. And my first thought was, well, I'm not buying any boxes here then. Like, you know, like, and I was like,
yeah,
thanks. And I was like, oh, that's good. And I was like, oh, I'll just get a couple of packs, you know, because I want to.
Pipes are dry here, my friend. I'm leaving.
Yeah, I was like, I don't think he meant it that way, but I'm thinking, like, if that Bedard Easter egg was, they were saying one a case, remember that, or one of every two cases, whatever it was. I kind of just played the odds game. The odds are going to be super low for me anyway, but when the guy was like, oh yeah, someone got it a couple of days ago, I was like, I fold, I'm out.
And yet, to you, you said you fold, you're out, and yet if you do the same thing at a casino, they'll kick you out. If you're sitting there thinking, okay, they're playing two decks, and I've seen 7 aces played in the last 6 hands.
Counting cards. Right, counting cards.
You just got to be better at it, that's all.
You're like playing blackjack, and it's like, okay, should they hit me or not? I really need an ace. And then you start thinking, you know, and then you go, no, I'm out, right? Because your odds of getting that ace are really low, right? I think you should be allowed to count cards. In fact, I think you should keep a little spreadsheet and be like, oh, I see another king has been played. Tally that. Oh, I see another queen has been played. You know, another card worth 10. You know what I mean? Like,
Well, Sal, it's not bingo, but no, but what I'm saying is though,
the trick is to be able to still do that, but the spreadsheet right. has to be up here okay. and you can't have your eyes darting around all the time,
but,
like looking
but
at
you're it. Right. They all wear sunglasses.
But the analogy is right. Exactly. The analogy is right. The hobbyists become the ripping packs become like gambling. That's true. And the house is either the store or the breaker or the manufacturer, in this case Upper Deck. So you're right. Like the analogy works because we do live in this sports gambling culture. And a lot of those people we know from the pandemic, they found in cards and watching breakers the same rush, right? And the guys like screaming and yelling. I mean, whenever I see a breaker screaming and yelling, I don't even want to bother watching them because I'm like, okay, this is all a show, you know? And so the analogy works because, and look, a lot of people are in it for the thrill. Even bidding on eBay could be a thrill for some people, right? I mean, whatever. But I'm saying, like, you know, while Tim was looking for Bedard cards in terms of the sales, and it was good to do that, I was like, how much is Leo Carlson going for? Like, how much is the Young Guns? It was like $85. I'm like, that's not bad. You know, I mean, like, I think we should go where the people are not going. Like, they don't want to get the other Young Guns. Maybe the other Young Guns are going for what, $5-$10? Maybe this is our chance to start building that Young Gun set. Because let's be honest, at $300 a box, I didn't buy one today. I didn't ask you guys if you did, but I'm assuming nobody bought anything. I mean, I got an email from David Adams, like, hey, you know, the boxes are gone, but you can get blasters for $50. I was like, no, I'm out. Like, no, I'm not interested in $50 blasters.
Let's talk about the pricing for a second. Okay. So we went from, what was it, 160 initially to 180 to 200 to 250. Yeah. To 300. So by the time this rolls out, it's $300 US. Okay. So you're paying $300 US on a hobby box. Blasters were about $50. Tins were being advertised in most places for about $90. Now, everybody is up in arms about those prices, right? I think we can agree nobody likes those prices. We're obviously certainly not rolling back to, you know, 10 years ago or 20 years ago pricing, but these are a little ridiculous. And everybody's pointing the blame at Upper Deck. So what did we get this morning in our emails? We got the Upper Deck advertisement that, hey, we've got retail series 2 available in the Upper Deck store. Are they selling it for 50 for a blaster and 90 for a tin? Nope. They're selling it for what the initial MSRP was at $29.99 for the blaster, because that's what they're up to now, and $69 for the tin, which is what they were supposed to be if you went to a Target or a Walmart or whatever. And of course, the pricing is going to fluctuate slightly, but it's going to be generally close to what that is. But that's what their pricing was. So pointing all the blame at Upper, and I'm not saying they don't deserve any of the blame, but when they released it in their own retail shop, it was at those prices. It was not at those inflated prices that you see with a lot of the online retailers and the dealers and everything like that. So I think a lot of this was shuffled through what the distributors were charging. You know, it's part of that chain, right? So again, Upper Deck's also not going and saying, hey, you can't sell this for more than whatever. I mean, obviously, it's a free market. You can do whatever you want with your business. They're not dictating what the price has to be. They're not putting a cap. They're not putting a bottom, nor are they putting a top. So are they to blame for that? I don't know if that's a blame. They're not doing it. And I wouldn't imagine that they ever would, you know, dictate what it should and shouldn't be. Cause that's kind of,
they probably couldn't.
Yeah. And that's the other thing. How do you enforce it?
Right.
Because, you know, the question comes up, okay, Walmart shelved a bunch of stuff way early, a day or two early. Now people are buying it. But the SKUs aren't working. And everybody's complaining on Facebook about the SKU. Go to your Walmart. They have them, but the SKUs aren't working. Well, duh, because they're freaking time sensitive and they didn't activate yet. They're not even in their system until that date. But you're trying to buy a product that hasn't been activated. So they'll sell it to you for whatever the sticker price is supposed to be. Yeah, you walk out with the product a day or two early. So what does that say? Upper Deck sees that and they're like, well, wait a minute. This, we can't have this. Okay. Are they going to go down to Walmart and say, Walmart, shame on you? No, it's Walmart. I mean, come on. Target. Shame on you.
Gargantuan, right? They're huge. I mean,
yeah, you're not gonna say a word to them. Now, if ABC Sports Cards in, you know, Paducah, Kentucky, and I apologize if there's an ABC Sports Card in Paducah, Kentucky. I've never been there. You probably have a great shop. It's awesome. But if you sell it early and Upper Deck finds out, yeah, if you're a diamond dealer, chances are you won't be invited to the diamond dealer convention because that's, I mean, it's frowned upon.
It's a no-no.
So you have that. Those things hit the market. Oh, I paid $39.99 and now I'm going to sell it for $75 or $80. And then Upper Deck comes around and says, hey, this is $30. Well, why is it $60 over there? Why is it $50 over there? I mean, they're not telling them to sell them for that. They're making their own pricing out. So I think the fingers need pointed elsewhere. Now, again, they do other things too. Quality control is bad a lot. Collation is bad a lot. You know, there's all of that kind of stuff. They're not off the hook on those types of things. But I don't think you can point to the manufacturer for the pricing. That's just my two cents on that. But back to the original point. Why are we paying $50 for a blaster that has one young gun in it? Why are we paying $90 for a tin? Now, I realize if you break this down, it's less per card going with the tins, even at the $90, when you're talking about the value of the young guns overall. But why? It's a tin. It's a retail tin. Why are we doing that? Here's the other thing. Retail doesn't have the numbered cards that I know of. I think they're all in hobby. So yeah, you can get some of the parallels, but I don't think any of the numbered cards are actually in there. So if you're shooting for that gold, I don't think it's in retail. Just guessing, but I don't think it is.
No, because when I bought retail for Series 1, I bought a blaster and I bought a tin and I bought a mega box. And there were no numbered cards. They're just basically retail packs. So you're not going to get any of the numbered. You're not going to get any of like the more desirable hits. Really, if you're buying retail, you're like me. You're just chasing after the young guns, trying to build your set, and that's that. You know what I mean? Or you're not worried like, oh, I'm not going to get a clear-cut parallel in this one. Well, that's not what I'm really collecting for. I'm collecting for the base cards and the young guns, right? So that's why I go after retail. You know, I mean, just to point something out really quick, I'm just looking at the Walmart website. Basically, you have like resellers basically selling the blasters at like $50 to $70. I mean, here's, seriously.
I believe you.
Here's one third-party seller, because like on Amazon, you could sell on Amazon, you could sell on Walmart.com like it's Amazon. So here's one seller selling a blaster for $50. Here's another seller selling a blaster for $70. Here's the one being sold by Walmart, and it was $25, but it's sold out of stock.
Yeah, so see, Upper Deck had it at $29. They put theirs at $25. You know, like I said, you're going to see a few dollar fluctuation from retailer to retailer. But that's the general price point.
And then even like there's somebody selling on Walmart, they're selling the Walmart exclusive Mega Blaster. Maybe it has an oversized, sorry, I keep refreshing the site and things keep moving around, like disappearing and whatnot.
One of them has the oversized young gun. The other ones I think have the OPG glossies.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. I want to ask this. Who is responsible for the price being jacked up and for a lot of these like major online retailers saying, hey, we can't sell this to you for $200, but we can sell it to you for $250, or hey, we don't have it for $250, but we have it for $300. Like our allocation's been cut, so we are refunding your pre-order price, but now we have more and now we're going to sell it to you at the higher price. Who's responsible for that?
Like who caused them to do that?
Yes.
A little greenish colored piece of paper with a guy that never was president on it caused that. Money.
The market, yeah.
Because, well, and I guess the biggest culprit of this that's been pointed out by numerous people of this happening, I guess wouldn't be really using the $100 bill example. Do they have a $100 bill in Canada?
Yes, they do.
I don't even know how that currency works. That currency is so messed up. It's like Monopoly money. It's weird.
It is.
It's colorful.
Has holograms on it too. It has.
Yeah. I mean,
like Canadian money is like the best. It's like the ultimate trading card because it's like it has see-through areas. It has holograms.
It feels weird too. It feels like rubbery.
I'm surprised it doesn't glow in the dark because they threw every other gimmick they could at Canadian money to make it like
this,
special.
This is why when I go to the expo, I spend more than I should because I don't really think I'm spending real money. I'm like,
you're like, okay, here you go, my friend. Here's two purples and an orange.
Yeah, that's where they get you. But you know what I'm saying? It's completely greed. It's greed.
Who's jacking up the price? Because Upper Deck didn't say, you know what? We're going to make 1,000 cases and stop. If DA Card World says, hey, you know what, Upper Deck, we ordered 100 cases, but we really need another 100 cases. What is Upper Deck going to say? No, we're done. We're turning off the presses. They want to sell as many cases as they can because they make money off of that. The league and the Players Association wants them to sell as many cases as they can because they make money off of that. So I want to know who is deciding that we're going to cancel your order and then relist it. Do we blame the big retailers? Do we blame their distributors?
Well, the retailers and the dealers are the ones actually doing it. If the distributors are then jacking the price off on future orders, then obviously it's being passed, you know, that savings is being passed on to the dealer at that point, and the dealer's got to cut their losses. But some of these bigger retailers like DNA, they're a diamond dealer. They're getting stuff direct from Upper Deck. I don't think they're using a distributor. So if everything's coming direct from Upper Deck, I find it hard to believe that Upper Deck's going to sell you 2 pallets of cases. And then when you say, I need 5 more pallets, they're going to turn around and say, okay, they're double the price now. I don't know that Upper Deck would do that. Maybe they would. I don't know. But I mean, what good would that do them? Like, it would be beneficial that they were just like, okay, this is what it costs. I need 2. I need 10. I need 50. I need 300. Whatever it is. And just keep rolling them out as long as they have them. Because if they're selling them, what do they care? And I know that's another conversation we have all the time is, what do the manufacturers care about what this stuff sells for on eBay after the fact? Because they're not making the money. They already made the money. I think it's more to the point. But if there's a distributor involved and the distributor's jacking up the price, then yeah, obviously the dealer's going to jack up the price too, because they're going to want it. They're not going to want to eat that difference. They're going to make somebody pay for it. Where they cancel orders that have already been made and all of those prepaids and blame it on not having product, that's where I have a problem. Because the whole point of a presale is that you can buy it based off of the allocation that they offered. If they run out of the presale and say the presale is over with and you can't buy anymore, that's one thing. If they sell the pre-sold items and then turn around and cancel your order, that's a whole different thing. I honestly think that any orders that were made, bought, paid for, and are just waiting for the shipment to come, they should be honored at whatever they were sold at. And there shouldn't be any of that. You know, we'll give you $200 in store credit, but we're going to charge you an extra $300 for the product because of your inconvenience. It's a little more than an inconvenience. Not only am I out, you know, the savings that I probably had by buying early and getting in on the presale when I did at $199 or $249 or whatever it was, your $200 that you're giving me is actually costing me $100. Because I got to spend $100 more to get it back. And that's kind of stupid. And I think that's wrong. And that's kind of what some of these places have been getting blamed for, is these were pre-sold. You're refunding me money, and then all of a sudden, miraculously, you have more. It's like, oh, it's a miracle. Well, that's kind of shady to me. Again, it's business, and this is what people do, but I think that's shady.
I would rather the prices were lower and they sell more. I get the whole supply and demand thing, but the whole like price has just been so out of whack since, like, literally, like, since they started listing series two, what, in like October, September? Like once it was like determined that Connor Bedard wasn't going to be in series one, he was going to be in series two. I mean, his young gun wasn't going to be in series one. Did the pre-sale prices start at 160?
I think it was around there.
I think initially when people started posting them, when it was still up in the air whether or not Bedard was going to be in series two or not.
That's right. That's right. And then once it was announced, it went from 160 to 200.
Right.
Right. And then it went from there.
And then that's when I was just like, eh.
Yeah.
Well, and here's the thing. There's major incentive for people now to get in on the extended pre-sales when they go live, because we already know based off of the images that were released for the preview that guess what's in extended? The canvas young gun. Yeah. Yeah. The Bedard canvas young gun is in extended.
But that's a tougher pull than a young gun.
It could also be a retro young gun if they wanted to put it in there.
Oh, snap, dude. They've done retros every year in extended.
Yeah, so they'll do a retro. And Lafreniere, remember, they were like, no. There's only young gun will be in series one. And then it turned out there was one in every series. You know, it was crazy. And so with Bedard, there'll be a retro. And, you know, I don't know how common they are, but Tim is right. People are going to buy those products now, pre-sale. And then extended will never be so popular, right? Because we talked about that in the past, how like nobody wants that.
That's the whole reason. That's the whole reason we talk all the time about extended being the leftovers, and it ends up $150 box, and two releases later, it's $49.99.
Yeah, if you're a predict the next year, you're going to have all his patches, game-worn, because he's going to play this year, so all the game-worn patches, autographed cards, they're going to milk this thing for years. If he makes good, which we think he will, because unless something happens. But at that point, who knows what will happen? A lot of these people we're talking about today will be long gone and we'll just be here to pick up the pieces.
Oh, but no, they'll all be back when the cup comes out.
Oh, well, yeah. Well, the cup is what, 2 years behind. So when the cup comes out in 2026 for this year,
right.
You know, you're right. You know, that will be crazy. I agree.
By the time the cup comes out for this year, all my kids will have graduated high school.
Okay. And you know how like rookie debut was like that EPAC only set that came out and sold out pretty quickly.
Right.
It was like, what was it, like $20 for like three cards or whatever, $18.99 for three cards. So here's what Upper Deck could do between now and when the cup comes out. They just need to like keep releasing 23, 24 sets. We'll see Collector's Choice will come back. They'll start doing Power Deck again, you know, the CD-ROMs.
We're catching up.
We're relaunching Power Deck for the first time in 25 years with the exclusive Connor Bedard Power Deck. And like, what were some of the other sets? Well, a lot of them ended up as inserts and like in extended, like UD3 and holographics and stuff like that. But I'm just thinking like they just need to go and just find some like weird sets that they haven't done in like 20 years and be like, hey, guess what? We're doing this now as a 23-24 set. They'll just make things up. They already do OPG and OPG Platinum. Then they could do OPG Premier as a standalone set. They could do OPG Gold. They could do, I don't know, like Upper Deck Super. I don't know. You know, like they could be like 5x7 supersized. They could just keep making 23-24 sets, even in 24-25. Because, heck, we're getting 21, 22, 22, 23 cards in 23, 24, or we did anyway. So yeah, they could just continue that trend.
Upper Deck is constantly filing trademark claims for branding and names of sets and things like that. It's interesting to see them pop up sometimes to see what those names are and wonder, is this going to be a real card or is this going to be something on EPAC? And now we wonder, is it going to be one of the Evo cards, the digital collectible? But since we were talking about EPAC, the one thing that we haven't mentioned in this entire conversation is, what if that gold outburst is in an EPAC? I just blew all your minds. The silence is just deafening.
No, what I was thinking about was, what if there's more than one?
Well, yeah, we got to worry about that too. Like they made it like a pop count.
I mean, I know it's not Tops or Fanatics. I know they've done that already, but what if there's like two of them pop up, then it's a whole other thing.
Yeah, like the pop count ones had four or five.
Somebody with deeper pockets has to punk DA Card World. Like, we need someone like Drake to be like, yo, if you find that gold Connor Bedard, I'll give you $2 million and a shout out in my next hit single.
But let me ask you this, the bounty, like, does David Adams have $1 million to give? I mean, how good is his business doing? Like, that they can give you $1 million. I don't believe, and that car's not worth $1 million, is it? No.
Well, it is to them, right?
But then what? And they're going to flip it to who?
Logan Paul?
Look, it's a publicity stunt. We talked about that. I don't know. And maybe, I'm sure if someone finds it and offers it to them, they'll
say. Who bought the one that they had the bounty for? It was that, like, the ring. It was the ring card. It was some other, it wasn't Drake. It was somebody, Post Malone.
Oh, okay.
Bought it. That's the one that had the bounty on it. And the guy pulled it and Post Malone ended up buying it.
What card was it?
It was the ring. The ring from Lord of the Rings.
Oh.
It was a card of the ring from Lord of the Rings?
Yeah, but I think it was a magic card, maybe?
Magic the Gathering?
Yes.
Oh, I don't know.
I don't remember. This was not that long ago. And since I don't do anything but hockey, I don't remember exactly.
You need the kind of money that, like, Post Malone has. You know? So that's what I mean. Like, it's not even in, like, the universe that we're even talking about, that 99.99999.
I need to offer $2 million for that gold Bedard and then start a Kickstarter.
Do Puck Junk will offer $2 million.
Yeah, but I need a GoFundMe for that, right? And then I could tell everybody who funds it owns a fraction of it.
A fractional. Yeah, you could do that.
Yeah, fractional ownership. There we go, right? We could crowdsource this, right? Then, yeah, and then in 25 years when Bedard is inducted into the Hockey Hall of Fame, then we'll put it on a heritage auction. There we go. I just figured it out. That's what we'll do.
It took an hour and change, but you got there. Exactly.
Yeah. So any last thoughts, gents, before we wrap this one up? Because I know we're probably going to be talking about this topic again very soon.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I apologize to all of our listeners for being Bedard bombed with everything that we had to say. And hopefully we never talk about this again, but that's highly unlikely. So, sorry. This is the world we live in, as has been said like 3 times, I think, on this show today.
No, I mean, look, good conversation. Everyone's talking about it now. We've been talking about it forever, but we're talking about it now when everyone else is talking about it. And, you know, look, to be continued.
I like that. Okay, well, thank you for listening to the Puck Junk Hockey Podcast. As always, if you've enjoyed the show, please be sure to like and subscribe. Please be sure to tell your fellow hockey card collectors. Please write us a review wherever you listen to this podcast. And if you want to sponsor this podcast, you can buy a shirt at shop.puckjunk.com. You can also subscribe to the newsletter at puckjunk.com/newsletter. And until next time, collect what you like.
For more hockey goodness, follow us on Twitter @PuckJunk.